Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and get ready to start then. It's okay. We're going to just take a minute here and get totally ready to start.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, I'm on, so whatever you want.
There's some pretty good stuff in there.
I thought so too.
There's the stuff I think we need to be a little more strong. Like the 3 hour away is responsible party. They're not like that.
No.
But yeah.
We need to know right away. Because we're 3 hours away from
Rocky Drive.
Yeah.
But then we have Mary Jane, the character.
For the record,
that's going to take
more.
I think so too.
We do want to not just let them hang in limbo.
I know, because they are. But the point that it was a legal meeting because it took place, it should be able to be approved as minutes. But for that.
All right, I'll let you email, get the facts.
When you start, can you say the date and all the
shebang?
Okay, so we're going to open the Boulder Planning Commission meeting for October 11th, 2018. And we have with us Matt Cochran, Colleen Thompson, and Josie Muse. We also have Perry Tancredi, and he is on a phone reception with us. We also have Curtis Overhensley, who is our zoning administrator. So the first thing we're going to start off with as far as the agenda goes is old business, and we're going to approve the August and September minutes. And Peg, do you want to kind of explain the situation we're in?
I think we will suspend the August minutes.
Still.
Until Curtis checks them out. We had a legal meeting of a quorum of three, but the members of the quorum, which included Tabor, are not present to approve the minutes, so they can't be officially approved until Curtis figures out a way to do it.
So you could make a motion to approve September, and then I'll look into it, and then next meeting we'll, even if you have to make a record by who was here and who's not, but you can read, and if you think that they're correct, and you can attest their, correct according to the tape and whatever, we'll figure it out. But for now, let's just do the August, right?
September.
Yeah.
So, so we're going to let August go by because, and I'm going to just make a little point of this as a reference later. We've had a hard time through these last few months bringing quorum on with the five of us because we all have such busy lives, as you all know. So anyway, we will go ahead and let August go and make a motion that we approve September's minutes.
Second the motion to approve the September minutes.
Perry called them, right?
Oh, Perry.
Was he here in September?
No. Where's he?
I wasn't.
Uh-oh.
Well, there's another one.
Okay, so there's another one. Did you, Perry, so did you hear that? So there's another one, Curtis. Okay.
Another one.
We'll have to do both of, we'll have to do that for August and September.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll look into what it is you can do.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll refresh my memory of who was here. We'll look back at the minutes and figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, so then we're going to go ahead on to new business, and tonight what we're going to do is have Curtis review the differences between the ADUs and the short-term residential rentals, so that every month we kind of get a refresher on exactly the differences between the two of these definitions and how we're going to use them. And Curtis?
Just as I pulled in, I thought, I wonder if I'm going to, if any of these pens work. And I have some at home, but it was too late for that. So I apologize. It's going to be a little hard to read, but just in real simple terms, just going to kind of go through 5 points of what an ADU is and what a, you're calling it residential short-term rental, RSTR. Is that correct?
Short-term yes. residential rental.
Okay.
Call it STR.
Okay. Yeah.
Rester.
Rester.
Okay, so on an ADU, it's a 30-day minimum rental. There is no tax involved on that. That's just a normal rental.
Can you guys move the phone a little closer to Curtis?
Yeah.
Pardon?
We just need to move this closer so we can
hear. Oh, okay.
And I think he'll be
on an ADU, there is no tax. You're not allowed legally to tax a normal month-to-month tenancy. On a transient rental, an RSTD, you're not allowed to do it without taxing it. There are people doing it now in Boulder, and they probably have not gotten a sales tax number for the state. And this is not a local regulation. This is a state regulation. You engage in transient rentals, you collect and pay sales use tax and transient rent tax both. And there's a county schedule for the way you have to do it. So on an ADU, point number two, it must be a separate dwelling, and that dwelling can be attached to the primary dwelling, or it could be detached, a separate building.
But it's got to have a separate entrance if it's attached.
Pardon me?
It's got to have a separate entrance
and,
if it's attached.
And a separate entrance, yeah. It's got to be a separate dwelling with a separate entrance. And like I said, it can be part of the main dwelling too, but it has to be, you know, walled off and with a separate entrance if it's attached. If it's detached, of course, then it also needs a separate entrance. A residential short-term rental, on the other hand, could be a bedroom, it could be the whole house. Let's say you go on vacation with it, or it could just be your house, any house you own. It could be the shed. I mean, not that much money renting the shed out on CRB or Airbnb. You ever look at the pictures of those things? I mean, there's a lot of competition. It's got to be very nice. So
okay.
The market kind of dictates, but
I guess people do.
It can be anything right now.
But when you say shed, to clarify, it has to meet code. So it would have the same requirements, a sink, toilet, and so on. I mean,
now, you have no regulations, so...
Right now, we don't. But
right, but I'm just assuming the present thing with the caveat that what you're working on is
right.
Working all that around.
But does state law address safety such as that?
Well, I'm probably stretching it. Okay. You probably can't stick them in the chicken.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a point of illustration. glamping. I mean, can you put a platform in a tent out? I mean,
that's a really good point.
People are done.
Yeah.
The minimum rental term on the ADU is 30 days, where you've brought the ordinance thus far, and that's what it would have to be as a minimum. On the transient rentals, it could be 1 day, or whatever you decide, but it could be 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, anything. Or it could be multiple days, it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks. Right now, in Boulder, one of the reasons the ADU ordinance is in play here is because after conversation with past planning commission, with the mayor, and researching the ordinance, right now, you, as the zoning administrator, if someone comes to me and says, I want to build a guest house or an ADU or whatever it is, then my response to them is, well, I can't process that application because our ordinance says you can have a primary residential dwelling and you can have an accessory building. And it says right in the definition of accessory building, maximum 1,000 square feet may not be used as a dwelling. So we've got several that are illegal, either mostly as guest houses and other things that are involved, or some that are actually non-conforming to predate the ordinance in 1998. others that were built since, and it just, the building permit was issued, it was just done. It was not pursuant to a variance or anything, it was just, it just came about. But if you look at the ordinance now, I couldn't process that application, or I couldn't sign up on that building, and that's the way it worked. And the county won't accept it unless fire marshals, zoning administrator, et cetera, signs off on it. So we're trying to correct that, and depending what the town wants to do, or how they want to correct it, or if they want to correct it. But that's why we're at where we're at with the AG ordinance. On this residential short-term rental right now, it's, there's nothing to regulate it, it is allowed, and you cannot prevent it without pretty specific ordinances that follow the statute. There's a case called Brown versus Sandy, and it sets forth the tests that you have to meet in order to exercise your municipal authority to regulate and or even ban these things. So, but you do have the power, but you gotta do it very specifically, and you can't do it retroactively. And then, I really ran out of ink down here. Number five, the way you guys would like to have it structured for the ADU rental is that that property must be owner-occupied. And just as a point, about an hour ago, I was reviewing this and I added another sentence under C2 that says the owner must occupy either the primary dwelling unit or the ADU as such and prevent nuisance by the tenants. As I got reading it through, it wasn't quite clear enough for me, so I stuck that, you know, four words in there. And there was plenty of discussion that he had about, you know, yeah, barking dogs and all this, the meth lab, or, I mean, that might not be it. So anyway, on a residential short-term rental right now, it's just guest occupied and you have no regulations. But you asked me to send you the Wayne County ordinance, which I did, and if you read that, it is pretty much geared towards control. You got to have a property manager that can respond within this short time frame, and then you as the owner, if you're not the property manager, you have to be able to respond within, I think, 3 hours, it says, and they regulate you. You have to produce a sales tax license. You have to get a business license. There's a bunch of hoops you jump through there. So what they do is control it. Now, as far as owner-occupied property goes, I mean, I don't know how you would do that, but there's probably a way if that's what you really want to do. But, I mean, you got to move out of the house and somebody else can move in. But if that's something that's important here in Boulder, that's, I'm sure, a conversation you'll have on the RSDRs, and we'll get into all those details. But right now, there was so much confusion at the last meeting about the difference. The people were, you know, they were very confused, and rightly so. I mean, they're both rentals. I mean, what's the difference? You know, what the heck? Why can't you write it all into one ordinance? And you can see why here. And then what I didn't add down here is this has got to be IBC approved, da 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 da, where this is probably existing in some form or another, possibly. So,
but the ADU, they're both rentals, but the ADU can also be just a guest house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not a rental.
And that's the area. I'll get into it on the agenda. It's number two item.
Okay.
So we get into more specifics on that and go through the ordinance if you want to answer any questions. But before we started, and I just didn't want, you know, to have people confused. So are there any questions about the difference between an ADU and an Airbnb?
I was just hoping you could elaborate on item four on the ADU. How does the 1,000 square feet fit in? Is the minimum, maximum, what is it?
The 1,000 square feet is only relevant to an accessory building, not at home. So it's not relevant to the ADU at all. It's relevant to your garage or your shop, but not as well. So this is adding a component to that. So now you have primary dwelling, accessory dwelling, this ADU, and a third category still, the 1,000 max square foot accessory building.
Stop here.
Are there any other
questions? Yeah. Maybe one of your properties could be the ADU.
Mary, anything?
So, thank you for doing that. So, speaking of that...
I'll put you back over here so you can hear Colleen, and then we'll shuttle you around.
So, we're moving actually right into the AD ordinance and the recommendation to the town council. So, do you want to go ahead and continue on? I'm not really sure if... So, I guess what we'll do is... We have the ordinance before us. We have a couple of them here. We had the ordinance before us the last meeting. And I kind of feel like maybe, are you interested in having Curtis go through the ordinance? And then we will go on to the next step. Would you be willing to do that? I mean, is anybody interested? Or I feel like I kind of want to just one more time.
I think we should just get a chance to talk about it.
Okay, so then let's go ahead and just we'll have, and then we'll kind of decide what to do from there. Are you okay with that, Perry?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so then let's just, does anyone have any comments? Instead of reading the whole thing, let's just go ahead and pick out if anyone has any comments.
Yeah, so this is Matt. First I'll start. Even after the confusing last meeting, I'm pleased with what we've started here. Yeah. I know it's not an over process. It still has to go to the town council. It's still going to go through a public hearing. We might see it back here. As far as my read through it and thoughts about it, I think that other than it was unclear if the separate entrance thing needed to be in 7C and in 1A, or if it's covered elsewhere where we talk about attached units.
And I made a note, I'll make sure, if you make a motion to set it up, I'll make sure that that gets noted, and it'll go in your minutes too.
Okay.
That
where's 7C?
It needs to be clear.
It's starting on page 2? So what page?
Yeah, 7C is page 3. It's just wherever it's talking about attached unit, I wonder if we needed to specify that also had to be.
I agree with that. Yeah, that should be specified.
But Curtis, you said it's written somewhere else and as an overall condition.
Okay. D2. Maybe D2. Maybe it was in here somewhere.
Okay. Yep.
So that sort of covers it.
Reason that's in the standard, see, that covers it whether it's a guest house or whether it's an ADU rental.
Okay.
I did have some, I've been going back and forth trying to think about primary and secondary residence, because I know we've had some discussion on that, and it gets really confusing when we try and lump these two together. But right now, I'm happy to start with as a primary residence. I was just thinking of people, if they have a secondary home down here, they don't really have as much need for an ADU, so they can rent out their home when they're not here, and there's no conditions of that. Anyway, so I think it's a great place to start, and allows enough control that will satisfy keeping to our vision statement and our Boulder in the way we want it. So I guess those are my only comments. I'm gonna go on it. So.
Perry, do you have anything to say or add?
I'm happy with it. I read through all the comments last week. I kind of reflect what Matt said. I think that I'm happy with where it stands right now. I'm ready to move it up to the town council.
Okay. Josie?
I agree with all the comments that have been made. I do like that we've decided to go with primary residence, or primary ownership. But the one thing, as I've been reviewing other ordinances, and we've had this discussion, but I just want to bring it up again and to the town council's attention, so maybe it can be discussed there, is putting teeth in our ordinances and enforcement, adding teeth with enforcement in our ordinances. And a lot of the examples that I came across were violations would have a minimum of a $250 fine, maximum of $500 fine.
I would like to see us start going that way. And in this particular ordinance, that would just apply to the failure, well, there might be several examples, but the one I'm thinking of is the failure to apply for the permit if you're having some type of a financial gain. And I think that's important, so.
Yeah. If we do, fine. I would rather be relative to the financial gain, like a minimum fine or relative to the financial gain, so that it's not, it doesn't just become someone could write it off at the cost of doing business. So it should be a minimum fine or a percent of what you've made, whatever is greater.
How do we track that?
Well, if an enforcement action uncovers the fact that someone's been renting it without an ordinance, we should be able to hopefully get some proof of rental and what's been paid.
And if not, then I mean, the minimum fine would apply if we couldn't get that information.
Well,
yeah, if we couldn't get it, then we'd have to go with the minimum fine. But what I want to avoid is, you know, I've lived some places where some, you know, wealthy people look at the fines as just, you know, an acceptable cost of avoiding regulation. They just pay the fine and move on with whatever they want to do. And I want to avoid that here.
And I would just add to that, and you'll revoke the CUP.
Right. Yeah,
they're,
yeah.
They can't then. They get a letter from the town attorney and say it's revoked for, you know, if you want to do it for a year, you can reapply next year, but you got to show good faith and da-da-da-da. You do that once and people fall in line. So,
yeah, unless they ignore it and continue to rent it.
Well, that's solvable.
Yeah, I would just, yeah, we should be, I guess my point is we should be careful with fines because some people can pay fines easily.
Yeah, but do we need a fine system if we have a cut in place?
I'm going to have to check with the town attorney on the fine because there are, and I can't tell you exactly where, but there are provisions for violations, ordinances, a misdemeanor, et cetera, and I'm going to have to look at that. And if it's not there, then, you know, see, you know, how you want to approach it. I honestly don't know at this point. It may already be covered if you violate the ordinance, but you could put it in here that it's a misdemeanor, and you can get a range of fine. And, you know, they get a summon from the Justice of Peace, who's also our town attorney.
I'm pretty sure we have a, I don't know if it's in context of the conditional use permit, but there is a mechanism in place already for a fine in the Class C misdemeanor. Yeah.
There should be, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure, so I don't want to say.
It's good.
But, you know, we can certainly make a note of that and make sure that gets covered.
Okay. Okay, so I don't really have any comments. I kind of agree with everything that's been said, and so at this point, I think what we're going to do is make a recommendation for the approval of the ADU that we have before us and that everyone has seen. We have three options here, and so we will send it up, and if they don't want to approve it, we accept that, basically. Or we're going to make a recommendation that it's approved with our stated concerns. So if we, I feel like we kind of want to move it forward to the town council with our stated concerns, which we just, instead of taking any more time on that. And so, so are we going to vote on this, Peg?
The way to handle it is
to... I've never done this, so I want to make sure it's right.
One of your members makes a motion that you forward it to the town council at the most latest draft, recommending approval with a couple of concerns,
yeah.
One concern, I guess, And that would be that there be an enforcement mechanism through fines or whatever. And then you need a second.
Yeah.
And then okay. You need a roll call vote of how each person votes on something like this.
So I make a motion that we move this forward with exactly what Curtis just said. Is that okay?
Right.
Okay. And that we are going to now have a roll call vote.
I'll second the motion.
Oh, okay.
And somebody seconds.
Okay, so I make a motion for that. Josie's just seconded, and then we will have a roll call vote. So, Matt, why don't you go ahead and start?
Matt Cochran, yes. Aye.
Okay. So, Colleen Thompson, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Terry Tancredi, aye.
Okay. Okay, so I think most everybody that was here tonight was at the workshop that we had yesterday. And the reason why we have this workshop is because we're continuing to move forward with the work that we did this winter. And we had a workshop on how to take that information that we gained from the community in the committees that we had, and how we could use that information to the best of our ability, really. And I feel like we learned a lot. And anyone that I've talked to about the workshop, I think really enjoyed it. There was amazing information. I'm really sorry you couldn't be there, Perry. But I think you're going to be excited when you get back and see and hear about what we talked about. And what I'm going to do is, because we kind of asked Josie if she would move forward with this winter, and she even provided us with an outline, I think, in September. And I'm going to go ahead and let her take the floor right now and kind of go over what happened yesterday and how we will move forward with the information that we gained.
Okay, so first, I think we had a really good turnout. We had 21 people, as I counted, and I think it was worthwhile. It was worth our time, worth the town's investment, so you know, thanks to the town council for approving that. What we covered, basically what we started with was a list of 30 policies that Mr. Nellis put together that would apply or be applicable to the town of Boulder. And from that list, created a checklist and gave it to groups. We split into three groups of seven. And the group's first assignment was to go over the list and decide if those policies were an absolute, meaning that it was either a fail or comply with a proposed project. And then if it wasn't an absolute, then it was a relative. And so the language that he used was absolute relative. I've used the same process, but use standards and guidelines, where standards are what you're absolute and guidelines are your relative. So if you determined that certain policy was relative, then you added a weight to that from 1 to 5. And that would come later in the process when you're reviewing this project, how it scores. And the end result, you would like to see a positive score before approving, or at least not a negative score, because that means something needs to be worked on. So that was the first part of our day, was to, in our groups, decide how we felt about those policies and what category they fall into. The second part of the day, we took two projects. First was a open space development. We had an example here in town, which was 11 acres? I think it's an 11-acre lot. Yeah. And it kept a 79%, I believe, open space, and had a development of 4 single-family homes. And they were approximately 1,400 square feet. They were in a circle type of a cluster. And so what we did is we took this proposal and took it through the process, this checklist, of the 30 different policies and rated it out. And all of the groups found that it rated as a positive. There were some absolutes, I think, in some groups that would have needed to be dealt with before we could have approved that project. But in the end, it was all issues that could easily be fixed be brought to the Planning Commission again and with an updated proposal and application and go through that process. And I think the key to this, the take-home message, was that we've spent a lot of time kind of going in circles, having discussions, repeating discussions, you know, issues come up again and again. This checklist process is so efficient because once you go through that, I mean, you've justified your answers. It would, you know, it would be defensible in court. It provides the applicant, you know, reasoning and the process to follow. It provides the record that you need and the administrative record. So it was a really, really good learning process, I think, for everyone. The second project we looked at was an RV park development, which was another really interesting project because, you know, when we first look at it, you're like, oh, no way. But it happened to pass in all three groups except for the site selection. But that was a really good learning tool as well. And that take home was that site selection is key. And Mr. Nellis explained that it makes your zoning parameters less static. There's a little bit more play there. It's more important what the site is than what the zone is. And I think that that's going to be a hard learning curve for us, but that's very interesting. And since we're doing the general plan and looking at that, I think we're going to have a lot of discussion on that.
May I make one comment? One of the takeaways I got was how I was surprised, actually, how much she focused on the landscape and geography, actually.
Yeah.
If you want to keep the character of the town is what dictates
right. The
development. If we can craft ordinances that way, that's how I'm thinking about
right.
it.
Right. And that was the site selection. I mean, it really plays a better role than just keeping to these strip zones. And
Yeah.
So that I
agree with that too. It really helped me realize that we are unique as a community and that our properties are very unique. Everybody has, you know, there's so much difference within our town borders that we don't want to stay with this cookie cutter approach to things. And it gave us a really good way to figure out how to keep our open spaces, you know, and how to create things that we want to in the future with a template that there's really no, like, argument. I felt like we really have footing to stand on now. And I felt really good coming out of that meeting, and I, too, am grateful that we got to have it. So, Perry?
Do you it sounded like everything I heard was positive about it. It sounds like a pretty good process.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I missed it.
Yeah, so. So, Josie, then basically...
What next?
Yeah, so then you gave us, like you gave us a pretty good outline. I'm not sure if that's kind of off.
No, I gave a six-month outline, and it doesn't change. This is just, you know, a more efficient process that everybody can buy in on as far as the end result. What we don't have, and what I mentioned when I did the outline, is we still don't have objectives. So that's going to be our second step. The first step is going to be getting the committee, but I'll get more into that. Is getting some SMART objectives. And then once we have that, we can move into deciding these policies, building checklists. I mean, we still need to review the plan and see where there's a need for change. So there's plenty of work in 6 months. I'm hopeful we can get that done, you know, in that time frame. But the first step is we need to build a committee. And so I think, you know, what I had mentioned that I would like is a committee of five. I still think that would be an efficient size group. I would like at least one other planning commissioner on the committee. And then I was thinking maybe even bumping it up to three or four members of the community. And to decide
you know, who is going to be on the committee. I think we should put out a public notice and an outreach, you know, asking who would be interested. It would be nice to have a diverse, you know, group. And then once we get feedback on that and get a list of people together, then, you know, we need to decide how we want to choose, you know, the committee members in a non-biased way.
What about having one town council member on your committee, too?
That'd be great. Yeah.
And would the committee be holding these meetings publicly?
Now, that's the other thing I have on my notes is I wanted to first ask if we were required with the open meeting law to have open committee meetings, because I wasn't sure. But I'll just, you know, my opinion on that is...
Not unless you had a quorum. And if, so if you keep it to two TC members and one TC member, I think you're fine.
So I don't want to discourage public participation. But I think that there's a more efficient way to do it with having public comment periods. And that would happen when we report back to the Planning Commission or we report to the Town Council. Those are public comment periods.
Right.
And my reasoning is the public won't attend every meeting. And so there's if there's comment periods during those time, we're going to be spending a lot of time repeating ourselves. And we have, you know, a limited time frame to get things done. And I want to keep the process moving. So to not have it as an open meeting would be the most, I think,
yeah, let's say you've got something to present. No,
yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah.
And, you know, for my part in it, as the zoning administrator, I don't want to be on your committee, but I probably would like to be invited to most of the meetings just to, so when you bring up a point, you're going to get things where you say, well, now, can we do that?
Sure.
And then I can do research and come back to you and say, yes, but here's how you have to do it. Just to keep you, so you don't come up with something that you go, oh, we spent all that time and there's a case that governs it or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's a good number, you know, because you'll actually have six, which still is a reasonable number. You got three and three. Mm-hmm. Three from the boards, basically, and then we'll have three committees.
You don't need to count me on the committee. I'm just going to be an input.
Okay.
I don't want to be a...
Okay. So then we... yeah, so staff.
What are you going to call them?
And I feel good about three people. I mean...
Okay. Adjunct or something.
And then, so then when it comes down, who chooses those three members, then will it be Steve as our mayor? Or is this, like, how will we go about that?
And I would put that out to a question.
So that
is, how do we choose the members so that it's a, you know, fair and non-biased approach?
Well, if you're the chairman, you start looking at a committee and then getting with them and I'd ask Steve who...
Yeah.
Well, and I would leave it up to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
I think this is who you think would give you the most value, because
mm-hmm.
that's what we're looking for, I think. So I don't know that the Town Council needs to be the recommending body for that.
Okay. So I'd like to make a... I think it would be...
I mean, we could approve the recommendations if that's it, but I don't think we need to do the choosing.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
But the process will be your committee, and like I say, if you can get one of the town council members on, just for communication purposes, then once your committee has an outline, then what you'll do, once you're comfortable with what you have, then you can start opening up for either informal public meetings, or you can go to the Planning Commission with it, advertise it, and then at some point you'll start the public hearing process. And then when you have a document that you feel, after however long, that you're satisfied with, then just like tonight, you would recommend it up to the Planning Commission, I mean the Town Council, and then they have to start it all over again. They have to have public hearings of their own.
Yeah.
And they're the final one that have to pass on it. So that's just, those are the steps.
Okay. So what I was saying is, as far as selection,
right.
We don't have to select.
Right.
My suggestion for selection is we choose someone who has been in the general plan groups public-wise since the beginning of last year and was also at the workshop. So we're all on the same page. That feels fair.
I did consider that as I was thinking this through with one hesitation is that there are some members of the community that were unable to do the working groups and have expressed that, and I wouldn't want to not consider them. So...
Because we're not going to necessarily use this format right now as we're going.
It will look different than that.
Than this.
But we'll have a check.
We're talking about too, they probably aren't going to use this exact format.
No, because that doesn't, this, no, I mean, it does fit into the general plan, but it also fits it more into the ordinances because it's policies. Right,
well, you were saying.
Well, the other thing is too, is that there were, what, four different groups in the initial meetings?
Yeah. Right.
It'd be nice to have, I'm still saying, someone from each of those groups so we have that's reflected, each of those specific conversations is reflected by someone who's done the work already, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, then, so if we were to do that, can we take the people that we know were in each group and go through, and then you,
well, or first, we, you know, we can't assign them that. We'd have to see who would be available in it.
Exactly. So can we post it like that as a, how do we go about that?
Can we, yeah.
I was going to say, so if we post that, if we post that, then it will define who we can feel, who we feel we want as a committee.
Wait,
committee
you can
meeting.
Post the people who attended the, or took part yeah. in the last winter's meetings?
Yeah.
Or we could send them emails. Or that's the way we're going to go.
Why don't yeah. I send you the list of the people that...
I've got it up right now.
Okay.
Perry, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree that we want a diverse, I don't have a strong opinion. I agree we want a diverse, non-biased assembly, and I like the idea of picking people who have been involved.
Okay.
Whether you all agree or not, I'm happy to volunteer as the other PC member if you want me on that committee, or if you or Perry, Colleen or Perry, or feeling like you really want to do that, then we can figure it out.
Okay, are you okay with that? Okay.
Yeah.
So then would we like to be able to put this on the agenda for next month, that we have these committee meetings, I mean, so that we can keep this moving?
Yes, I would actually like to get the committee together before next month's meeting. That would be, you know, the assignment this next month. Is to start to get some responses within 10 days. And I think if we're going to go with this list, and I'm looking at it, and it is a diverse group, and there's a lot of, you know, there's definitely a lot of names on there, so if we started with emails, that may be the best way to go, is just to email for interest.
Okay. Do you want to send out those emails?
Sure.
Okay. Or did you want me to? Or?
No, I can do that. I was going to ask you to do public notices, but if we're going that route, I'll go ahead and email.
Okay. Like a direct email to those individuals.
Right. I may need your help getting their email addresses if you could compile those.
Sure.
If you would have them. There's probably a sign-in sheet for the groups, right?
Probably.
Yeah. If you could get that to me, then I can take it from there.
Thanks, Josie.
You bet. Yeah, thank you. That's not, if you, let me
I just have one more comment. I really like the idea where you talked about the checklist and the ordinances.
Yeah.
And the general plan all being aligned. Mm-hmm. So you could start with a checklist and work back, or you can start either way and maybe a little of both.
Probably.
You know, because a checklist is a great way to say this is important, and then go back to do the ordinances have that? Does the general plan have that?
Right.
Yeah. Or you can start the other way. What do we have? What's here? So I just like that continuity between the three things that we come up with.
Okay, so does anybody have any more comments on that? Okay, so the next item on the agenda is we have a alternate planning commission member, and so I think that we just talked about why we really need to have an alternate member on this committee. It just seems really, really important, and people really have busy lives, and I wasn't there at the town council, so I'm going to kind of feel my way through this, but I think, Steve, maybe you can help me out with this just a little bit. Can you tell me how this came up?
Well, we recognized the need that we needed an alternate, and a lot of towns and cities have alternates, and so it filled that gap. where you have someone missing, it gives one more voice to the process. So we had Curtis and Mark and Kim get together and draft something that would draft an ordinance to create that. And so now it has to go through the process. It has to start with planning. There has to be a public hearing, then your approval, another public hearing. So it has to work through the system. So all we would ask is that we can do it as quickly as we can, but...
So do we go ahead and let's just put it on the agenda?
We'd have a public hearing for next meeting.
Exactly.
You could do that, yes. And yeah. You guys are willing to obviously add in anything that you want, and then the public can comment on that too. You know, I want to keep it fairly simple. I think it's a simple concept, so
yeah.
You don't have to get too complicated with how we do that.
What you're actually requesting is a zoning ordinance change.
Yes.
Yes.
That would amend the zone. So is there a requirement that you actually fill out the paperwork of zoning ordinance change application? Get a signature, et cetera, et cetera?
Probably. And Judy said that she was going to do that.
Okay.
So I thought maybe she had already.
Yeah, not yet. And this is really just a piece of paper, and what's already sent to you is the attachment. So.
Yeah.
That's a good point. We can have that done before the public hearing next month.
And my understanding is an alternate shows up for the meetings. If there isn't a quorum, then they can vote. If there is a quorum, they don't vote.
So I am going to just take 1 minute, and I'm not going to read everything on this, but as Peg said, an ordinance amending the Boulder Zoning Ordinance to add one alternate member to the Boulder Planning Commission. And what it is the quorum, number 5 says quorum and necessary vote. No meeting of the commission may be called to order, nor may any business be transacted without a quorum consisting of at least 3 members of the commission being present, which is still the same. The chair and the alternate member shall be included for purposes of establishing a quorum and shall act as a voting member of the commission. The alternate member shall attend the meetings, and in the event of any absence of any regular member at a meeting, the alternate shall assume a regular meeting member place on the commission and shall vote in that place at the meeting. In the event that all 5 regular members are in attendance, the alternate shall sit in on the meeting and have a voice, but shall not have a vote. All actions of the commission shall require a roll call vote of the commissioners duly seated at a meeting with a majority of said members voting in the affirmative. So that you will probably see posted here soon. And so what I'd like to do is go ahead and on the agenda, we would like to have a public hearing to do that along with our regular.
Are we voting? We have to vote on that.
Do we have to vote on it?
No.
You just can say that's what you want or what?
You just directly...
Yeah, let's just set up a public hearing.
Yeah. Yeah. Perry, do you have any comments?
No.
Okay. Okay, so then what we're going to move on to is our continued discussion on the short-term residential rentals. And Curtis sent us what Wayne County is doing right now. We also were using the outline, Perry, that you had sent to us a month or so ago with the whereas beginnings, that outline. And so I'm going to open it up for anyone right now to let's start discussing it.
Okay.
I felt that there were some good things in the Wayne County that I wanted to kind of take a look at, and I think Josie had brought that up. And so I did want to kind of
There was a couple of things in there. Go down a couple of more, one more time. It was every person to required to procure a license under the, let's see, that's not either. Oh, I liked this, licenses. Licenses are non-transferable. I feel like for these short-term rentals, that maybe we should hold off so that these are not transferable in any way, so that when there is a change, when someone maybe, you know, sells their property or whatever, that that license does not go with them. I know we didn't add that in the long term. Still a little iffy on that, but I feel that it's important on this one, and I'm not really sure why,
Are we talking about the CUP, or is there another license that we're issuing?
The state requires a business license.
Okay.
A tax ID, and then I think they also do, you get the business license and a one-year CUP when you go in and apply.
Well, does the state have any regulation on transferability of licenses?
They say it's non-transferable.
Yeah, Wayne County.
It's not the state that requires the business license. It's the county.
But there's a new state law that just in the last year that's requiring all short-term rentals to have business licenses.
But it has to do the county.
Right. They don't give you the license, but it's in the law.
You have to have two things, a state sales tax number and license, and then you have to have a license through the local municipality to operate this. Right. And they don't have a CUP in here. They have a business license instead.
Well, in any case, I agree with Colleen. I don't think it should be transferable.
Okay. So where is that?
So this one does have the penalty for violation, since I have it up, the 250, not more than 500 in Wayne County. I also say that, you know, I think, you know, Wayne County has this umbrella, but I think that each municipality can be more stringent than this if they so desire, where they could require the conditional use permits. And in past meetings, we mentioned that Garfield County is working through this as well. I bet they adopt something similar. But that doesn't mean that we can't add to it.
Well, and Garfield County doesn't tell you what to do here. So whatever they do is their deal. That's over the fence. And so you guys decide what you want to do.
We just can't be more lenient than what they have umbrella, right?
You can. It's a state law that you can't do less than, but you can do more than.
The county,
in most instances, is irrelevant to you. You are an autonomous body, and they get to do their thing, and you get to do yours. Just a clarification on the business license. I can't remember where it said non-transferable. I think that's in here, and it has to be renewed every year.
Was there anything else on Wayne County that you...
Not really. I'm wondering, when we talk about teeth in this, like, it seems like when we start jumping into this that there's going to be more paperwork, you know, to be done. And we talk about teeth and how, like, when we start getting taxes from... or is there somewhere, I mean, is, like, with Judy, like, she's, it seems to me that as we start going down the road, she's going to have more paperwork, you know, because if we want to have teeth on this, then we have to make sure that people are giving us our documents, you know, that. And so do all these go to the county, or which goes to the county, I want, and which comes to us?
Nothing goes to the county. Everything comes to you.
So all the taxes and everything that are will come into Boulder Town. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Nothing goes to the county regulatory-wise. Just take the county out of it.
Okay.
The state is the taxing entity. And so the individual has to fill out this extensive tax form every quarter. and then they have to report the sales tax that was collected, and they have to forward it. And it's a rather complicated form. It's got two parts. One, sales and use tax. The other is transient room tax. But it all kind of makes sense and folds together once you do it a couple of times.
And so this will, these will be documents that Judy has?
No. That's the state tax commission. It has nothing really to do with Judy at all. All Judy does then is, if you choose a business license, she processes the business licenses. However, if you prefer not to have put that onto her, you can replace business license with conditional use permit, I believe. I'd have to check the law that Josie's referring to, but as long as you have a method for control,
That's what I'm trying to get down.
You can choose, I believe, between business license, CEP, or both. If the state has both, and you feel it's not fair to Judy to whatever, you could, to make sure this thing's running smoothly,
you can do both. Those are really two different things. If you have a business running, you need a business license. If you're going to collect taxes and so forth, you need a business permit, business license. So Judy would process those within the town. The county would process any in the other areas. Yeah. The conditional use permit is a usage for that land. It's aside from the business license. You would still, if you want to go through the CUP process, that's a separate deal. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's an either or.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the state law is going to have a business license, mm-hmm. and like I said, I haven't read yet, in order to do the taxes. So those are going to go hand in hand. If you want another layer of control, you can require a conditional use permit.
Well, the conditional use permit is important because that's part of enforcement. If there's violations, there needs to be, if they have a business license, you know, how are we going to control nuisance, issues that come up? So I think both would need to play here.
I think, in a way, we're at the, just to take a step back, because I don't want to get too far into the branches, we haven't even hit the trunk yet. I really like this. I think we need to start with a crappy, rough draft and just get into it. So what I like about the Wayne County ordinance is that we don't have to recreate the wheel. We have something to start with right here, which includes stuff like the business licenses, non-transferable, what happens with the expiration of license. I really like the idea for the short-term rentals that you don't have to be a primary owner, but you can have a responsible party or a property management, someone in town that might provide employment for them, so it's required. There are a lot of really great things in here, and so fire protection, false information, all this stuff is listed here. So what would happen if Curtis, we put our whereases together, combine something like this and start working off this as a foundation. And then, yes, we're going to have to get more stringent, I think, because we have issues we talked about last time about, well, how many short-term rentals do we want, for example, in each neighborhood, Lower Boulder, Central mm-hmm. Boulder, North Boulder. We also talked about, minimum days. Is it, does he start at a three-day rental so you don't have a daily turnover in the neighborhood? Things like that. But here's a really good foundation. But for me to write a paper or to write a novel, I need a really crappy, rough draft to see what's on the table to start honing it down. So that's sort of where I'm at.
So I researched kind of a circle of communities around us. And so I'm going to take even a step further back,
okay.
because there's some good examples. So what I found for Springdale is they, we read their ADU ordinance, but they actually don't allow the short-term rentals in the residential neighborhoods. They have it, it's a commercial activity, it's only in their commercial zones. So I thought that was very interesting. And so they don't have a separate ordinance. It's just in their table of uses. But it's and they call it transient housing. And it's lumped in with lodging and hotels and bed and breakfast, and it's allowed only in commercial. And then in public use, it's conditional. So that I thought that was interesting.
which will, then I'll jump over to Castle Valley, because that came up in a conversation.
Thank you.
And they simply dealt with it in their definitions, that it is a commercial use. They don't have a commercial zone, therefore it's not discussed any further, it's not allowed. So they don't allow it in their residential areas.
I wonder.
Which is pretty interesting.
That was pretty easy. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump over to Tropic. They just redid their ordinance because they had a lot of issues. It was changing the character of their neighborhoods. There were safety issues. I mean, there was just, there was a problem with nobody having anywhere to rent, to live, you know. And that's common in every community that you look at that has vacation rentals. And so what they did, and the only change that I can really see that's significant, is that they do require that it's owner-occupied. And that was some way to put a control on it. So there weren't just, you know, people out of town, and there were vacation rentals all through Tropic. So, Moab, it's zoned everywhere. And I just can say from a lot of conversations I've had, I lived there for 10 years, I've talked to a lot of people, what it's created there is a complete lack of housing for the workforce. And so there's businesses that have signs on their doors that they're closed because they can't hire employees because there's nowhere to live. So that's a pretty, you know, that's a huge issue. And we already have that problem here, so, you know, we take away any other possibilities for employee housing by the quick dollar. Now, I definitely want to have that conversation.
Right. Yeah, ADUs are providing that long-term space. And then a restriction on the amount of RSTRs, in my mind, would reduce that problem.
Yeah. Another
thing, some people want that option.
I think so. I'd be interested to know, you know, what is the percentage of the community that really wants this?
And how many are percentages already doing it?
Yeah. Another interesting thing about Moab is that they charge $500 a year on their permit for short-term rentals, and they do have enforcement fines. I like the idea of having a weekly or a yearly fee, because there's going to be a lot of work with this, and somehow we need to compensate. You know?
That's what I keep thinking about is the one thing that I learned from the committee, I mean, from that meeting, that I do believe is documentation. So that if we're going to have these from even the beginning, because I feel the same way with the short-term rentals, you're asking people to come into our communities from all over the world. And I just feel like as a part of the community, like we want to have information on those people. You know, just and have documentation somewhere that we know what's going on. Like Josie mentioned too to me, and we were talking about this, the one in that you provided for us. From Wayne County. I just feel like. That is my concern, is being able to have that information for people that are coming into our communities. And we only have 125 people here. Like, I think that we should put a number on how many we have. I think I read in Torrey where they were starting, like, they're going to have so many of them, and that's it. Once they have so many short-term rentals, that's it. They're going to put a halt on it. I've thought about that. How do we have just a small amount of short-term rentals opposed to our population, opposed to what you were saying? How many do we have in Lower Boulder? Do we have some? Because I just feel that those are some things that I personally need to bring up for my own concerns.
So on the question of number of rentals, it brings up another issue that Alyssa brought up, Lisa brought up, in terms of our status as a resort town and needing to keep the ratio of something like the number of available short-term rental bedrooms at, I think it's 66% of our census population. Which is something that we probably want to keep track of. We don't want to be surprised if we lose that. But that could be a number where we say, I don't know where we are on it, but we could say, you know, we could use that as a number. We could use a percentage of, you know, we will authorize as many short-term rentals up to, you know, 75% of our census population, which keeps us in a resort town and also provides a limit to the number of bedrooms.
And I think we'd have to even take that further, since we're such a spread out town, we need to confine that into, at least as I see it, three different neighborhoods. You know, separate that out so they don't all land in North Boulder, for example.
I agree with that.
So, the status is a resort town. I question that.
Yep.
We have one lodge, you know, and a small hotel with a couple rooms. And I've lived in resort towns. I've lived in Park City. I've lived in Breckenridge. You know, I've traveled all over. This is not a resort town to me. This is a community that's agriculture. I mean, the majority of people do not work in resorts here, whereas other cities,
yeah,
they do. You know,
the benefit to that is we get a lot of tax dollars from the state. So it would be a big hit to the town's budget if we don't have that designation.
Yeah.
It's not that we want to be like Breckenridge. It's purely for those tax dollars.
Well, and I think that I think if the person who owns, and I guess I'm just going to go ahead and say this, if you were to talk to Blake and you would talk about the workforce that she provides here, I'd say we're like right down the middle. I believe, maybe I'm wrong, as far as we are. I don't want to be defined by a resort town, but I think that we do have to admit that we have half of our population here working in that industry. I mean, I would like to know the percentage. So I think I don't really want to be considered a resort town, but when you look at our population or whatever, I think we have to go, I believe it's probably
about half now. Yeah, and I just want to say it's unfortunate that's what the state calls it, the resort tax designation.
Yeah.
Because I don't like that word. And it kind of distracts from the question. And I don't know what the numbers in terms of how many tax dollars we get. I don't know, Steve, if you know.
Yeah,
but
I think our last budget was about $66,000. Which is more than a third of our budget is resort tax.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, aside from whether, like, there's nothing in the general plan or anything of that Boulder identified as a resort town, and I don't think we should change that. I think
I don't
like that. If we just set aside that word,
yeah, I don't
keeping
think
those tax dollars
really
coming in is good.
I don't think it should, you know, put us in this box that, okay, so now we are collecting a resort tax, so that's how we're going to move forward with, you know, our future goals for a resort.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to move forward with our eyes open that if we do something that intentionally means we lose that budget, let's do it intentionally. Let's not do it by accident.
I agree with you. So, okay, Curtis.
Speaking of looking ahead, or what you just said, and this is just kind of a comment for perspective on the whole thing, kind of a big step back. In the early 80s, I rented a house in Springdale for a couple of years and went back and forth from the restaurants in Salt Lake, and so spent quite a bit of time there, made a lot of friends down there, bought a piece of property, et cetera. And so then I kept going back and stayed in touch. And if you've been to Springdale lately, I mean, especially on a busy week, it is unbelievable. But when I was there in the early 80s, in the wintertime, it was a ghost town. And in the summertime, it was very, very manageable. It was nothing like it is now. Stepping aside from Boulder, go back 4 years, and stand here on Highway 12 or try and walk across the street and Lola from the gas station over, you know, right on over across to look at the corrals or whatever. And it was, you know, there's nothing on the highway. do that this summer, literally, you wait. There's so much traffic. So I guess the point of my story is, looking from, at Springdale from the 1980s to the present, looking at Boulder now and what's coming, I'm not saying what you should do in any way, shape, or form, but I think that you have to start dealing with the realities of the situation and the decisions that you make now, the decisions that Springdale made then, some of which were really good, are the decisions that will guide this kind of growth. And so just really, because I think that it's coming. It's JAWS and it's coming. So no matter what you do it, what do you call it, it's going to end up being less relevant than the ordinances we passed, protecting the character of the town, the open space, all of these things. We need to bear in mind that it is coming, and we need to do some things if we want to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
So I'll go on record that I don't want to become Springdale. And we should construct this ordinance with what Curtis said in mind. If it's coming, let's put things in this ordinance that we like limiting the number, spreading them out. The intent. I mean, we should look at it where it goes. Like the intent behind doing this is to give residents, primarily to give residents extra income, right?
Yes.
So let's stay focused on that and build the ordinance so that we're not creating a Springdale, at least, and ideally not allowing us to become a Springdale.
Well, and I'm going to go back and say one of the things that I continue to say over and over is because I'm from Boulder City, Nevada, and we have a limited growth ordinance in our town. And Boulder City is the largest geographic city in the state of Nevada, and it still retains its small town image because it has a limited growth ordinance that did work for it. And so I know it's possible. You know, I grew up in a small town and it did not grow by leaps and bounds like Henderson and Las Vegas did. It has grown a bit. But I believe that as a community, you can control your growth. You can't stop growth, but I do believe that you can control the things in your town. It's the same thing with these our ADUs and what we're doing right now. Like, we can control it. I believe that, even into the future. Because as the town grows, then that means that more people will be able to have their short-term rentals.
It's like Lee Ellis said yesterday, you can't control if it grows.
Yes.
That's an alienation. You can't do that. But you can control how it grows.
Yeah. And that's what I'm really learning in all of these situations when people keep saying, oh, you can't stop growth. It's just gonna, and you're not telling us that. I believe that we can do this. I believe that we all feel that in this town, and like he was telling us too, as long as we document these things that we're doing, we're not trying to keep it out of our town. We just want to have control of that. And we're not telling people they can't make extra money, you know, but we're trying to do it in a controlled way. And because I believe that's what we want here.
Can you reiterate for me then the points? Because quite frankly, some of this stuff I'm going to have to research and come back to you with, you can't do maybe this or that, or maybe you can't, I don't know. But this whole area has been heavily litigated across the country and will continue to be. So you want to limit the number in the town.
Correct.
You want to limit the geography, so you want to limit the number by area.
Yeah.
Okay.
The density.
What was the other thing?
The density.
A minimum day stay.
Minimum day stay. Right? Yeah.
Is it two nights minimum? Three nights?
I think you can do one.
But I'm saying I want to avoid
that. Nope. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Because that creates daily turnover in a neighborhood.
Okay.
And so
it's a good point.
And that one I'm not sure about.
We can, yeah.
Whether that would be that whole open line.
Well, and I know that the owners of a Airbnb can obviously do that, but it might be nice to do it on.
Well, the owners can.
Yeah.
And I'm going to send you a case, and if you can read it, it would be great, because it really goes through. It's called Brown versus Sandy. It's 1998 or something. I think it was the first Supreme Court case in Utah that took this whole issue of transient rentals in a home apart and said, here's what municipalities can do.
We looked
now
at that before.
Now it's 20-something huh? years old. I don't think I sent it. But if you read it, then you start to kind of like get a sense of the parameters of what they're saying. When you're talking about property rights, what they're saying you can and you can't do. But having said that, they clearly said you can flat out prohibit it if you want, like Springdale did.
Do we have any idea when Garfield County is going to come out there? And is that going to affect whatever we do here?
When I talked to Justin, I said, what'd you do on this? He said, we didn't pass ordinance, we just consider it a lodge. It comes under the lodge thing definition, and we're issuing conditional use permits.
Now, so they're not going to be going
6 months ago, so, well, that was 6 months ago. Maybe they are considering something. I don't know. I can call them and find out.
I find it so interesting that we go to these meetings and they talk about how we want to stop using conditional permits, basically, and yet, just like everything else, I mean, that's the decision that they took, was they are going to use conditional use permits.
But if Garfield County does an ordinance, we're going to have to adhere to it.
No, we just have to. It's only over county lands, so municipal lands, it's our regulations. Yeah.
They make their laws, you make your laws. Okay. There's some taxing things that interplay, but basically.
So it's not wasted energy.
Right. So, I mean, I think it seems like everyone's in agreement that this is a commercial activity. And if the county's looking at it as a lodge, it's definitely a commercial activity. So I'm just questioning, in our whereas statements that were drafted, we're saying that it should be restricted to the non-commercial zones within the town. And I'm not sure why.
I find that kind of weird, too. Like, I mean, I have really tossed that around, too, in the last few months as far as, why do we restrict them from commercial, or why are we thinking of that? Because we only have a limited amount of commercial property anyway. Mm-hmm.
And I think,
and it's not like that's going to grow, you know, that's, so is there, I'm kind of with you, Curtis, do you have an idea?
There's only like 5 pieces of commercial property in the whole town, and none of them have a residence on them, and the ordinance is clear that you're not allowed to have a residence on a piece of commercial property, so I kind of think it's a moot question.
Mm-hmm.
So in the example of, let's say, Hills and Hollows putting in, if they wanted to rent out part of their property, let's just set aside the campground for a second, if they want to rent out part of their property, it would be under some other ordinance, because it's not a residence. Is that what we're saying?
Well, they're zone commercial, so they can engage in commercial activity, which already includes lodging, campgrounds, or whatever they're doing over there.
Right. I mean, I don't feel strongly about that particular clause, but I don't think we are preventing commercial properties from having rental units on them.
So in our table of uses in commercial, did you say they can't have a residential, or they could?
Well, you can't have a residential and commercial, but if you've got a structure that you're renting out as transient rentals, like a lodge or like a B&B or something, then that's different.
Can we check that? Because my memory fails me as to whether we allow employee housing in a commercial zone, or a previous planning commission wanted to allow housing in a, you know, like employee housing in the commercial zone. So the proverbial place above the store kind of a deal.
Right.
Or in the case of Hills and Hollows, they do rent out the trailer in the back.
But those are long-term rentals.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're talking about short-term.
But I'm just...
So, well, let me ask this a different way. Is there any benefit to that, to restricting it to residential? What do we gain by it?
For short-term rentals, you're saying, Perry?
Yeah, for short-term rentals.
Well, if you look at the commercial buildings that we have right now, and I'm just going to use these as examples, Hills and Hollows right now, They're not, I hope I can say this, they're not, they don't, they've gone from having people live up there to businesses that are there. Elisa, I'm going to use that at, can I do this? At the outpost, if she wanted to have someplace to rent, I mean, I don't, where would she do that? I mean, so I'm just using these as examples. The Bertrand Outpost, if they wanted to have, and I don't see where these properties really have room to...
Well, let's take that one as an example. What if they wall off part of it and, you know, make it, get it up to Sanders so they can rent it, if they, you know, wanted to...
Right.
Or extend it. Would we have, like, do we want to prevent that in this ordinance?
Maybe.
I don't see the need for it, but that's...
I don't either, now that I'm thinking about it.
Long-term rentals, totally understand.
You can already do short-term rentals in commercial, and as far as long-term rentals go, I have sort of, because of all the good stuff going on, I've sort of dropped the rezoning on this property and State Park. But I am going to bring that ordinance back in because it's something we need to look at. And I don't know if you recall, but in there I put that you can have a long-term employee unit. Because like you say, the place above the store, the State Park here has a trailer for an employee. And it's you can do that in GMU, but you can't do it in commercial. But you probably should be able to. It doesn't make sense not to.
Okay, so then I guess I will, so one thing that I can think of is if we restrict this ordinance to residential only, then we are basically telling commercial properties that they have to use some other ordinance. They have several avenues to rent out the property. And we want them to conform to, say, a lodging ordinance or a hotel or motel or whatever, which I think is fine, actually. If there's a commercial property they want to rent out commercially, our ordinance already allow that. They don't need to, I mean, it's not a residence. It's not a residential short-term rental, so it should be excluded.
I agree.
And what we're not saying that we don't want them to rent out their, you know, parts of their property. What we're saying is we want to do it, we don't want them to do it as a commercial, under a commercial ordinance, not under a residential ordinance.
Yeah, this particular ordinance you're designing here, you probably just ought to stick with residential short-term rentals, like you've titled it.
That's
and then let the commercial thing be itself. I think it's going to be cleaner for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so is that as far as we want to get on this right now, or did you have any more questions for Matt as far as what, you know, like you?
What I have is minimum days stay, the things that I'm going to kind of research and reread that case and send to you, limit the number of residents that can qualify for the license and where they can be placed, if you can do it like geographically to divvy them up.
Right, and then maybe we can discuss this now for just 5 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And leaving commercial out of it.
Okay. So ownership or primary owner or responsible party required?
So we talked just a little bit about this. I mean, I like the owner occupied because it has that control. But Mary Jane talked to us in one of our meetings and comments that, you know, she is a caretaker of this house that is a second home.
Isn't that in the county?
She's not in the city.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, she's not in the city limits.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Specific.
Okay, then we can drop that example. That doesn't
well, except that we might want to think about responsible party in the way it was framed in here. I thought was interesting and worth some discussion because...
Yeah, I think we can have both, right? We can have it be owner-occupied, which, again, you know, it's not clear what that means to me. Does that mean 6 months out of the year, 2 months out of the year, or whatever? And we can say you also have to have a responsible party, whether it's the owner or someone else. Who can do things like respond within a certain time.
Means that they are there to tell the users of the property, so it's not absentee, you know, the code or what you have to, you know, what matters is behavior in town. If there's maintenance problems, they're there within 2 or 3 hours. They can also just be on call within an hour. There are specific parameters in the Wayne County code that sort of is actually quite controlling.
Right, which I like. And what I'm saying is, you know, if we try to have it both ways, basically what we're saying is we don't want someone from out of town buying a property, assigning a property manager, and never setting foot in Boulder.
Okay.
That does not solve our stated issue of trying to, you know, allow for rental income for residents. So I think the land should be owner-occupied, whether it's the PD or the ADU. And we also need a responsible party, if and whether it's the owner or not.
I lean towards that. The Wayne County says there's a 3-hour response from the owner. I don't like that for our location. You know, I don't know. And I think the responsible party should be, I mean, maybe not necessarily on site, but greets the guests, you know, outlines the policies and regulations and rules. I mean, I'd like the owner occupied. I prefer that, but
right.
You know,
not a drive up, unlock the combo, and get in there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what we decided to craft around that.
I don't know if we decided either. I mean, do we want to? I mean, it sounds like Perry and I are both owner occupied, but it doesn't. They don't need to be the manager, but it needs to be the primary. The property has to be the primary residence.
Let's put that in there as a starting point.
Okay. And looking at the other ordinances, most of them have owner occupied.
Okay.
Just for that control.
And
traffic. I mean, I think we fit more in that boat.
Yeah. And I think in general we should write it more restrictive in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then
And it protects our, you know, the character of our neighborhoods to go that route.
One clarification I wanted to make, I just noticed one of your comments, Matt, about the last couple whereas clauses, one of them was about us monitoring this. The reason I put that in there was, you know, if the reason we're doing CUPs primarily is to just be able to track the number of these in town, we should actually do something to track them.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we do have that tracking because there'll be the permits. And so basically it'll just be keeping a good record and doing a report on an annual basis.
Yeah. Yeah, my intent was like, let's not just say we're going to record all that. Let's say we're going to look at it every now and then and either take some extra or not.
Okay.
It's great to have the data, but we should also plan on acting on it if we need to. You know, so I would say, and I don't know if this needs to be in the ordinance necessarily, but you know, it should be our intent to maybe annually or biannually review how many there are and what it's doing to the character of the town and if the ordinance needs to change.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Can't spell all my brain can handle for me.
Yeah, I know. Do you?
So.
It's pretty big.
What do you want to go from here?
Oh, well, I want to put it, well, I think
you
should
put
it. Want
me to put together a skeletal kind of a thing that covers these points, please?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we should put it back on the agenda for next month so that it's on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just forget it while we're doing this other thing for the rest
of the. You did say on the agenda this time you're going to open up for public comments at some point, too. You're still going to do that before we close.
After business, yeah.
So do you want to just leave it as it being on the agenda for to talk more about it, and then we'll open it up to maybe a public hearing the month after,
Yeah, let's make
let's
it work.
Let's do that so that we kind of have a, like we, okay. Same thing with what we did before. Let's not move it so that we're doing it all the time.
Yeah, right. So you have a draft available? Is that what you're saying?
For November.
Yeah, November for the residential.
Yeah, I don't feel
change
like
change terms on me again. Residential RSDR, short term.
RSDR, yep.
Okay.
RSDR.
We don't have enough stuff.
So I don't think so either.
For a public hearing, but they don't have to come up on themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. But you just have a public hearing then on the alternate PC number.
Correct.
And just a discussion on a draft of the short-term rental.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And then will you, well, no. Okay.
Oh, and Josie would have a...
Just an update on...
An update.
On
so that we take these and keep, we'll just move them to the next month then.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any other comments, Perry?
No.
Okay, so then the upcoming business for November 8th, we just did that.
Yes.
As far as an agenda. No, that's, I just want to make sure we hit this bullet point. You know, so what we're going to do now is we're going to open...
Wait, one more thing.
Yeah?
Number one, the meeting for November 8th...
Oh, yes. It's right here.
...is after... Okay, so we start at 6 p.m., we start the 6 p.m. meeting time again, because it'll be after daylight savings time. Did you get that, Perry? No? Okay. And I don't, it's up to you if you want to, you may as well wait until December to vote on it, but before the start of the year, you need as a body to decide when you're going to meet and what time you're going to meet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Okay. Yeah.
And that.
That was it.
I think
just those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, then I'll make a motion for public comments.
Yeah.
Are we to make a motion to close the
working meeting? No, your public comments are going to be on the record.
Okay.
No. So that's...
Then you open the public... Oh.
No, it's not a hearing.
Gotcha.
It's just part of the agenda.
I am glad. Thank you. I'm glad I'm not the only one. That. Okay, so yes. So we're going to open up for public questions and comments now. And if you'll come to the podium if you have a comment to make.
About anything.
About anything, yeah.
I just have a few questions about what was discussed. First, I didn't quite follow whether the commission wants to use Wayne County as an example in drafting the skeleton that Curtis is going to work on, or if Josie's going to pull in some other bits and pieces of other city ordinances that you've studied. I didn't hear that resolved. And then this is a really hard thing. That's the end of that comment. And then my next comment is, it's a really hard thing to write an ordinance on because, like Uber and the whole sharing economy, the thing happens so fast that people are reacting to it and then it's changed already. Case in point, as I was listening tonight, there's a home sharing thing, and I don't even know if the town cares to try and regulate that, but it's very close to a residential short-term rental, but no money changes hands. It's done on the internet. It's sort of a house trading thing, and I don't know the name of the site, but there are already people in town doing this. And the very thing you're worrying about happens with nobody knowing about it, because somebody from another place goes on vacation, comes to Boulder, stays in somebody's house, and then that person goes to wherever the other party's living and stays in their house. So the sharing economy, social phenomenon changes so quickly that it's going to be hard to keep up with it. It's an observation. I don't know if it
there's an answer to that. And those are just two comments I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we want to answer?
Answer
Bill's question about.
Yeah.
I don't know the law on that. I mean, I could sit here and construct a bunch of variables and say, well, why don't I just say, well, you can't stop me
for 30 days. We're talking about the first comment that he made as far as the skeletal RSTR and the fact that Josie made.
Okay.
Are we going to take, were you making those, why don't you address that?
Well, I could certainly forward what I found to everybody. And then Curtis can make that determination if that's something that's going to pull into the skeleton. I think we did decide that we're going to use Wayne County as just kind of the starting point,
well,
right?
Or Wayne County allows it.
Yeah.
And that's why
what
I heard, you want to allow with limitations.
Yes, yeah. So it would be more stringent.
And a lot of these other ones that you're talking about, Springdale, Castle Valley, so disallow it. So
right.
There's no point in my looking at the ones that disallow it unless you tell me you want to see an ordinance that disallows it.
I just wanted to bring it up so that we had that option to know it's possible.
Gotcha. And so in my mind, we're putting the whereas statements, the skeleton of the Wayne County with some of the restrictions you heard today that we talked about, into a very first draft.
And I can forward you Sedona, for example, which is a pretty sophisticated jurisdiction. They now allow it. They had it totally disallowed. The Arizona State Legislature passed a law that no town or county can disallow it. And so they had to change their ordinance and now control it.
I would love to see that. That'd be great. Yeah.
And actually, from some of just the newspaper articles that I read, it sounds like Utah might. If they haven't gone that direction, if
2 years ago that bill was introduced.
Okay, yeah.
Disallowing us from controlling it. Or not, we can put regulation in and business like all that,
yeah,
but you can't forbade it.
But it didn't pass?
It didn't pass.
Okay.
It didn't get out of House, but it was House Bill 113 or something.
Okay.
Does anyone else in the audience have any comments? Perry?
No, I'm good.
Okay, we've got one.
I'm Elaine Lott, and I'm from Escalante. I don't pertain to Utah Boulder, but anyway, just the reason I'm here is because I'm on the planning and zoning in Escalante, and we're doing this stuff right now. And our town has kind of run rampant on holiday homes, is what we're referring to them as.
Mm-hmm.
And we right now have over 20. And it's interesting what happens and what goes on. I have a couple of holiday homes, and I'm also a motel owner. I know the money, I know the regulations, I know the policies, the procedures, the rules, the guidelines. And when you do a commercial business for my motel, I have all of these rules. My sheetrock has to be fireproof. Yet when I build a home over here, it doesn't have to be. So I think what needs to be kept in mind as you're going over these ordinances for these short-term rentals and stuff, it's the same business as a hotel. We're here to make money. But yet me as a business owner of my motel, I'm having to spend this much more money to create that space to make money, whereas a home has to only spend this much money. Also take into consideration the expenses for utilities. Over here in my motel, I have to pay a demand charge and sewer. It's more than a home over here. So even though we're in here to make the same or to do the same business, the rules kind of seem to be so different. They say life's not fair. This really isn't fair. It really and truly isn't fair. But Uber, all this stuff that's coming about, you know. So I think we just kind of have to keep those things in mind and kind of keep that in consideration as not taking away business from the motel owner, the lodge owner, because what happens if we go out of business because you have all of these short-term residential houses throughout the community, and your town folds because your lodge goes down, and then, you know, who knows what happens. So anyway, just another perspective on the use as a motel versus the short-term rental.
Thank you.
I appreciate you allowing me to be here, and I'll probably be back and share this information that you have given. You've got some great ideas going and stuff, and I will share this information with Escalante, and hopefully I can get some more of our community members to come over and join you guys in the future.
And I just want to let you know, we have a whereas statement for our intents that we're still crafting, obviously, but it says, the short-term rental should be managed in a way to mitigate negative impacts to local short-term commercial rentals and other local businesses.
That's awesome.
So it's, it's part of our thinking behind it.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you. I just have something on that. So if we require the same safety regulations in the home to rent to the public, that's a possibility.
Wow.
Is that to the no bathroom, no sink? I think it should at least be IBC.
I think in the Wayne County ordinance say you have to have working fire.
Yeah, it just covers fire.
Smoke alarms.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that could.
But it doesn't say IBC in there. That I did a quick scan after you said that, and it's not in there.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
Smoke detectors, two agents.
Yeah. No, this you highlighted the point. The reason Springdale has outlawed is because the hotel lobby is so strong in Springdale.
Yeah.
And that has made a huge impact. Obviously, it's taking business away. And so the hotel-motel industry is, fights it everywhere. And, makes all these same arguments. So it's just a question of how are you going to divide up this pie? Are you going to let the homeowners benefit, share some of the benefit, or are you not? And it's just, those two sides are never going to reconcile themselves.
Well, I'm on the side of the lodges and the motels. I said from the beginning that I'm not comfortable with the short-term rentals. But I'm not comfortable with the short-term rentals. I think we've already, our community has already been so heavily affected by the tourist industry that to conserve what we have left, it's kind of this last clawing effort.
I feel the same way. I feel like we're trying to make an effort because we are required to do it.
I
feel like that, maybe not right now, the state is not requiring it, but, what if we craft an ordinance that says we don't want them, and then in 6 months from now or a year from now, the state says,
that doesn't guide your decision making right now.
Moab brought up the point that they do have to review their ordinance every year to keep up with state law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody have a comment on that?
Hurricanes, their ordinance says for every 1,000.
See, that's, I read that one.
They have 3.
I read that.
And so I brought that up at Planning and Zoning with Escalante, and we only have 800 people, and we have over 20.
We have 125 or 150
So there, you could really, put a limit on it and just say 3, and then that's it. And should justify it with your 125, people and so forth.
Well, we need to put together whatever it is you want to do, and then hear from the citizens. This should be delivered. This should be driven by the property owners and board.
Yeah, that's why I really kind of want to keep this moving too. Basically, far as and hearing from the public. So, does anyone else have a comment?
I just do. On keeping it moving and hearing from the public, I kind of feel like I'd like to hear from the public before we put too much work into it. Time's valuable. And if the majority, does the majority want it, or do we say it's a majority thing? Is it a vote type of an issue?
Right. Don't we have that from the working group?
I don't know, but because like I said, not everybody was represented in those working groups. I think it would need to go beyond what those particular groups provided to us.
It's not in the committee.
I don't believe that... Go ahead, Perry.
I agree that those working groups didn't represent anyone, but I think that that's a good starting point for us. And we should move forward with the understanding and the expectation that not everyone's going to agree with that, but I do think that that's a good starting point.
I'd still like more of a consensus from the community than a handful of people in a working group.
Right. I guess my point is that there's like one way to get to understand how people feel about something is to put something forth that they might disagree with. You know, I do think it's incumbent on us to get input from lots of different points of view and from everybody.
So
I don't think that should prevent us from putting a skeleton together that we know might not be, you know, what, you know, not even close to what the final is going to be.
So do you want to have a public hearing on it next month when we have a skeleton a draft that we will have from Curtis and have a public hearing
on
it?
I'm in favor of that. I you know, it's going to be really early. It's going to be like, I think Matt said, like a dirty draft. But the sooner we get people talking about it, the sooner we're going to hear from lots of different parts, lots of different points of view and lots of different people in town.
And it might be wise to start now because there's a really good chance that less people will show up at a public hearing than we have in the groups, to be honest.
I agree.
But yeah, I think we'll get more participation if we have a public hearing.
Well, instead of a public hearing thing, because we don't, I don't know if we have a draft that you're ready to have a, to publish as a public hearing, I could do this draft, you could do that, or you can take it and do a public comment session.
Exactly.
So you can get an idea. Last meeting, a lot of people, I think, turned out because they saw that on there, and this time they haven't. But if you headline it and put public comments will be accepted, and how much time each person has, and all that, I think you start getting a good consensus. Who cares? Who turns out?
I mean, people did show up because it was a public hearing on the ADUs, even though they commented on a short term.
Right. And they just didn't understand, but most of them thought they were here for the short-term rentals.
So instead of having a public hearing, can we put on the agenda that under that, that under the short-term rentals that we're going to have, that after that we will have public comment? Or do we want to go with the public hearing?
The public hearing is just, it's a requirement by the ordinance before an ordinance is passed. So it's partly to gather input, but it's also to meet the official state requirement of having public recorded comments before you pass along the ordinance.
If you're seeking consensus, we'll just put it on the agenda and seek public comment. Invite everybody to come out and express their views on it.
So it doesn't have to be a public hearing,
right?
No.
I'd like to go that direction for right now.
Okay.
What do you guys think? Perry?
That's fine by me. However we start getting public input, more public input, I think is good.
Yeah.
So a specific public comment period. So discussion about the RSPR and then followed by public comments.
Yeah.
Which is just a part of the regular meeting. Okay.
Yeah.
So question, do you want or do you not want a draft skeletal ordinance with these points in it that you talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then so that we have that, right, and then we'll open it up for public comment. That would be great.
All right.
I like that. Okay, so does anybody want to make a motion that we close
the meeting? I'll make a motion that we close the meeting.
I second that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Aye.
Yep. Aye. Thank you, Perry.
Aye, buddy.
It was good
to have
you in the meeting.
Yeah. Yep. I'll see you next month.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, good. Bye.
Bye. Yeah.
Have you been on the phone?
I know.
Matt Parker, and then you made a perfect overhead name from Texas.
I know I could probably look this up, but when do you have your meeting?
Tuesdays.
Tuesdays?
Tuesdays at 6.
Every Tuesday?
Oh,
Are the other Tuesday?
Okay.
That's good to know.
Every Tuesday we're busy.
Yeah.